tonight. Open up to 1 Samuel 19. We're going to continue our journey through this book of the Bible. And you're going to notice in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 19, a verse that really sets the scene for everything we're going to look at tonight. Verse 1 reveals how far Saul had drifted from God. Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants. It's not unusual for the king to speak to his son. It's not unusual for the king to speak to his servants. But this part is unusual. Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. Now we know that David was on Saul's side. It was David who went out and fought against Goliath. It was David who was a great warrior in King Saul's service. But Saul had drifted so far from God that he tells his son, I want David gone. He tells all of his servants, I want this man dead. How did Saul make this journey from king of Israel to murderer? Even though he hadn't actually killed David at this point, he wanted to, he had tried to, and we know from Jesus' words in Matthew 5 that if we have that in our heart, it's as if we are a murderer. So how did Saul make this journey from being God's appointed king to now wanting to kill David? How had his heart become this far removed from God? Saul's life is a cautionary tale for us. He shows us how far a person can drift from God. He shows what's possible when we open up our heart to Satan. Saul's mind and heart were so possessed by hatred for David that he openly admitted to his son and to all of his servants that he intended to have his son-in-law killed. Saul was through with behind-the-scenes plots and schemes. He was on a singular mission. His one mission was to kill David. What was the source of all this hatred? What caused Saul's heart to be filled with murder? Well, in James 4, 1 and 2, these words reveal to us what's going on in the mind and heart of King Saul. Listen to these words again and think about how they apply specifically to Saul. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Saul had a lot of inward fighting going on, a lot of these quarrels, these conflicts. James gives the answer. Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. So what's going on in Saul's life as described here years and years later by James? Well, notice that phrase, you lust and do not have. What was it that Saul wanted? Saul wanted the kingdom to be his forever. He wanted the kingdom to be passed on to his sons. He wanted to be the beginning of a dynasty. And that wasn't going to happen. That had already been taken from Saul, but he still wanted that. And in his mind, if I can get rid of David, here is the obstacle. Here is the one who's standing in the way of my family reigning over Israel forever. He lusted after that power, after that position. And he couldn't have it, so what did he do? He wanted to commit murder. You look at the next phrase, you are envious and cannot obtain. If there's one word that describes how Saul felt about David, it's this word envy. He was jealous of David. He was jealous of what he accomplished. He was jealous concerning what the people were saying about David versus what they were saying about him. And so he looked at all of the popularity that David had. He saw his position, and he wanted that. He wanted that fame. And he couldn't obtain it. So what did he try to do? Let's just kill this guy. Let's wipe him out. And then this last phrase here in James 4, 1 and 2. You do not have because you do not ask. These Christians that James was addressing, they struggled because they had distanced themselves from God. That's exactly what Saul had done. He's the one who had drifted away from God. He's the one who decided to disobey God. And so what we see here in James chapter 4 describes what was happening centuries prior in the life of Saul. The definition of lust is evil desire. Saul had an evil desire for power, for authority, and he was going to protect it no matter the cost, even if it meant murder. Saul had long ago abandoned God, and in the process, his heart was wide open to the attacks of Satan. So what did he do? He gathers his son, he gathers all of his servants, and he tells him, "I want David dead. Join with me in this endeavor." Saul was trying to use his position. After all, he was king. He was the most powerful man in the land. So he was trying to use his authority to influence people for evil. It's tragic when people waste their influence. We think of that phrase, waste. I'm reminded of what Judas thought concerning that perfume that was poured out on Jesus. He saw that as a waste. That money could have been used to help the poor. We certainly know that's not what Judas was thinking. He was thinking that money could be used to help me. But he saw that as a waste. Sometimes we see people who have great ability in certain areas of life, and maybe they don't live up to their potential. And so we'll use the phrase, that person wasted their ability. Perhaps it's most tragic when we waste our influence spiritually. When moms and dads waste their influence in the homes. When we waste our influence with people that we know that we could influence for Christ. Saul had an opportunity to be a man of influence for God, and he wasted it. And what we find here in 1 Samuel 19 is a man trying to influence other people to become sinners, to become murderers. We need to see the big picture of what King Saul was trying to do. He was battling against God. Have you ever done that? Have you ever fought against God in your life? Have you fought against the plans that He has for you? When it comes to a big decision you may have to make, have you gone against God trying to fight against Him, bringing about your own will? Do we fight against God when it comes to resisting temptation? Instead of standing with God, do we join Satan? Saul was fighting against God. He was waging war against Jehovah. Now, if we just take a step back and we look at what Saul's doing, it's easy for us to say to Saul, "Saul, this isn't going to work." When we take a step back and we remove ourselves from the situation, it's pretty clear what's going to happen. Saul, you're not going to win. But how many times do we do this? How many times do we fight against God, trying to live life on our own terms? And other people looking around, maybe they try to talk to us. And they try to bring us back to God's side because they've taken a step back. They're removed from it. And they're able to see, this isn't going to work out for you. This isn't going to end well. And that's certainly what we see when we look at the life of Saul. This is what he was trying to do. He was trying to kill the hope of Israel. The future of Israel lay in the hands of David. This man, after God's own heart, was going to lead Israel in God's way. That's what Saul was trying to kill. David would conquer Israel's enemies. He would consolidate the kingdom. He would gather much of the wealth that would be used to build the temple. He would write psalms for the Levites to sing in praising God. He would even design some of the musical instruments himself. God's covenant with David would keep the light shining in Jerusalem during the dark days of the nation's decline. And even bigger than that, we know where David was going to lead. The fulfillment of God's covenant with David would bring Jesus, the Messiah, into the world. That's what Saul was trying to kill. That's what Saul was trying to remove from the earth. No wonder Satan was so determined to kill David. When we see what David was going to do, when we see how God was going to work in his life, it makes sense that Satan wanted him gone. And Saul became Satan's instrument. But we know that Satan is no match for God. And we certainly see that Saul was no match for God. Let's examine what goes on here in 1 Samuel 19 as Saul fights against God and tries to kill David. We'll start in verse 1. Maybe that froze up. Let's go to 1 Samuel 19. We'll begin in verse 1. There we go. Now Saul told Jonathan his son and all his servants to put David to death. That's what Saul wanted. But Jonathan, Saul's son, greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "Saul, my father, is seeking to put you to death. Now therefore, please be on guard in the morning and stay in a secret place and hide yourself. I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find out anything, then I will tell you." Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?" Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these words. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as formerly. When there was war again, David went out and fought with the Philistines and defeated them with great slaughter, so that they fled before him. Now there was an evil spirit from the Lord on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing the harp with his hand. Saul tried to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence, so that he stuck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. We see Jonathan intervening on behalf of David. Saul wanted David killed. Jonathan is always standing up for David. I'm sure Saul knew that Jonathan and David were close. That fact had not escaped the king. And he probably knew that Jonathan was going to pass on anything that he said concerning David. Maybe Saul was thinking, if I can't kill David, maybe I can frighten him to the point that he'll leave this land and never be seen again. Maybe that's what he hoped would happen when Jonathan went and reported to David. We see that Jonathan did make that report. He went to David. He suggested that David hide so that he could find out what was going on in the mind of his dad. It's remarkable that such a magnificent son could belong to such a wicked father. Saul, who is so unstable, who is so focused on himself, this man who has no concern for the spiritual. And we see his son, just the opposite. Someone who's concerned about God, someone who's concerned about doing right. And so he's the one that's reminding Saul. Don't you remember what David did? Don't you remember when he went out and killed Goliath? Don't you remember that you rejoiced? And he called it what it was. He asked his dad, "Don't sin against David." That's what it was going to be. It was going to be a sin. And so we have a spiritual mindset in Jonathan that did not exist in Saul. We have a younger person being the spiritually mature. You know, within the Lord's church, the goal is for us to mature spiritually. The goal is for us to be more spiritually mature 10 years in our journey with Christ than when we started. That's what should happen. That's growth. That's natural. But it doesn't always happen that way. Just like with Jonathan, he was the spiritually mature one, even though he was much younger than Saul. He was the son. Even in the Lord's church, sometimes we see the younger people who have a maturity level that goes beyond some people who have been Christians for many, many years. It should not be that way. We should always seek to grow in our relationship with God. We should have a better understanding of who God is. We should be more mature in our faith once we've been a Christian for many years, as opposed to those who are just getting started. Now think about this question. What would you have done if you were Jonathan? After all, you were the one in line to be the next king. You were the one who should have stepped into your father's place. That was the natural order of things. So now you're in this position. Your dad comes to you. I want David dead. David was Saul's obstacle. He also could have been viewed as Jonathan's obstacle. What would you have done if you were Jonathan and your dad comes to you and says, I want David gone? Most people hunger after certain things in life. We can make some generalities about people and what they're chasing after. Most people hunger after money. They hunger after power. They hunger after fame. That's what Saul wanted, not only for himself, but also for his family. All of those things were attached to being king. Wealth, power, fame, all of that was attached to this position. What would you do if you were Jonathan? Had Jonathan had these same desires, he could have helped eliminate David. He could have tried to secure the crown for himself. He could have chased after the money, after the power, after the fame, after the popularity. After all, he was a valiant soldier also. He had faithfully served his father. Why shouldn't he be king? See, that's how Satan works. He starts filling our minds with these thoughts. But Jonathan, he made a different choice. I would even classify it as an unusual choice. He submitted to the will of God, and he assisted David. Instead of trying to remove David, instead of trying to get rid of this person standing in the way of him becoming king, he actually helped him out. We don't see that very often. Even some of the petty jealousies that we have in life. Somebody's in my way, get them out of the way. Let me have that position. Somebody's having success. I don't want that. I want to have the success. And if we're not careful, our hearts can be filled with jealousy, with envy. Maybe you've wondered to yourself, how can I stand out for God in this world? Maybe you've struggled with knowing how to live as a Christian. It always goes back to the choices we make. You can choose to follow God over chasing after the desires of this world. You can choose God over money. You can choose God over power. You can choose God over popularity. You can choose God over immorality, whatever classification of immorality you want to talk about. You can make the same choice that Jonathan made. I love Jonathan in these stories because he's going against the grain. He stands out as somebody that, wow, this guy's different. He's not doing what we would think he would do. He was not a typical character, even in today's world. And he shows us what's possible. It's possible to live a life that's centered on God. It's possible to make our life about God and not about all of these other things. And that always encourages me. Because it's hard to stand out as a Christian. It's hard to build our life on the right foundation. And Jonathan, he did that. He presented his father with two arguments for sparing David's life. He reminded him that David was an innocent man. All he had done was help Saul. And that was the second part of this reminder. David had served Saul faithfully by winning great victories, by coming into his court and helping him with his struggles. Why in the world would Saul want him gone? You know, Jonathan didn't mention that David was also very popular with the soldiers and the common people. But that was at play here as well. Back in verse 1, when Saul shared with his son and with the servants that he wanted David gone, did you catch how the people felt about David? They liked him. This was a good guy. Here's somebody that we can follow. And so they had a different opinion of David than Saul did. While Saul was enjoying the same moment, he agreed with his son, and he even took an oath not to kill David. But quickly we see that oath was meaningless. Through all of this, David remained a loyal servant. He did not allow the sinfulness of other people to bring him down. When the Philistines attacked Israel again, David went out with his men and soundly defeated them. He slaughtered them. And this only intensified Saul's envy, only intensified his anger. And once again, what does Saul do? He tries to kill David. All of these events, they seem so crazy. They seem so bizarre. Reading one verse in the Bible brings understanding to everything that we see going on here in the life of Saul. Listen to Jesus' words in John 8:44. When you hear this, everything that we see Saul doing that seems so bizarre, that seems so out there, it's going to seem logical once we read this verse. You are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. How does Jesus describe Satan? Two words. He's a murderer, he's a liar. If I had to describe King Saul with two words, you know what two words I would choose? He's a murderer, he's a liar. Satan is in control of Saul's life. So what should we expect from Saul? Just like Jesus said about the Pharisees, you are of your father, the devil. And you look at the lives of the Pharisees that Jesus was talking about, their lives were filled with lies. Their lives were filled with murder. They were on a mission to kill Jesus. So what should we expect from Saul? Exactly what we see. Because he's following after Satan, we should expect to see lies. We should expect to see murder. And that's what we see. Our lives reveal who we belong to. If we want to follow after God, our lives are going to show that. David knew that the time had come for him to leave Saul's presence and hide. But before he left and entered this period of exile, he went home to see his wife, Michal. This will be the last scene that we look at tonight. 1 Samuel 19, beginning in verse 11. Then Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him in order to put him to death in the morning. That vow that Saul made, it didn't last long. But Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, "If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be put to death." So Michal let David down through a window, and he went out and fled and escaped. Michal took the household idol and laid it on the bed and put a quilt of goat's hair at its head and covered it with clothes. When Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, "He is sick." Then Saul sent messengers to see David, saying, "Bring him up to me on his bed, that I may put him to death." When the messengers entered, behold, the household idol was on the bed with a quilt of goat's hair at its head. So Saul said to Michal, "Why have you deceived me like this and let my enemy go, so that he has escaped?" And Michal said to Saul, "He said to me, 'Let me go. Why should I put you to death?'" Saul surmised that David would go home. He was so determined to kill him that he sent his servants over there to be able to kill David when he came out of the house the next morning. Michal anticipated her father's action, so she urged David to get to a place of safety that night. So she lets him down through a window and arranged a dummy in the bed using an idol and some goat's hair. I'm not making this up. You read it. Straight from God's Word. This is a scene straight out of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Let's get the dummy in the bed, try to trick everybody. What Michal was doing with a pagan idol, it's a mystery. Why does she have this idol in her house? Especially one as large as a man. It's clear Michal was still depending on idols while married to a man devoted to God. Like her father, she was also a schemer. While she was scheming, David was praying. David was trusting the Lord. So many of the Psalms that we read and that we cherish, they come out of these experiences that David had in life. Psalm 59 was written based on what was going on in David's life at this time. This is what he wrote as Saul sent men over to kill him. "Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Set me securely on high away from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from those who do iniquity, and save me from men of bloodshed. For behold, they have set an ambush for my life. Fierce men launch an attack against me, not for my transgression, nor for my sin, O Lord. As you read this psalm, spies are running everywhere, trying to zero in on David, waiting for him to emerge from the house so that he can be killed. You hear David comparing these men to wild dogs lurking out in the streets. And through all of this, David's faith was in the Lord. Only the Lord could be his defense. Only the Lord could be his refuge. David's faith was in God himself. It was not in an idol wearing a goat wig. His faith was in the Lord of the armies of Israel. The next morning, the agents demanded Michal surrender her husband. She told them he was sick, and they reported this to Saul. Saul was so determined to kill David that he ordered the men to bring David and the bed, just bring everything. This is when the truth was revealed. Michal was reproved by her father for her lies and her deception, but we see she was simply following in her father's footsteps. You know, as we look at this story, one thing that becomes obvious: Saul is trying to do something that's impossible. Saul is trying to defeat God. And it's impossible for us to do that. When we look at the end of this chapter, there's one thing that becomes clear. There's a stretch here where Saul goes himself and tries to wipe out David. And through this process, Saul is forced to worship God. But he doesn't do it on his own accord. He does it because he's forced. But it shows that Saul is trying to do something that's impossible. Saul was a double-minded man. He was an unstable man. He was a dangerous man. But he was no match for God. And his life stands out to us again as a cautionary tale. Anytime we fight against God, we're going to lose. We're not going to defeat God. God had a plan for Israel. He had a plan for David. And all of these attempts that Saul made, they were just in vain. Because we're not going to rise above God. What we need to do is submit to God. And tonight we have another opportunity to do that. If you need to be baptized into Christ, if you need the prayers of your church family, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing together.